This episode is brought to you by the Old Dominion Athletic Foundation. Because of you, we create winners in the classroom, in athletic competition, and in life. Become a member today.
Yes. Hello, Monarch fans, and welcome to the Hudson Homers podcast. We got Coach Finney here. We've got CB here. We got a lot to talk about, but CB, how's it going?
I'm good. Better than I felt about this time yesterday afternoon, but that's all right.
We're all in that boat, I think.
And your Bravos are running away with the NLE.
They're doing great. And I was going to say, hey, how about ODU women's tennis when they're six-peat? Yeah. That's crazy. I think maybe they've said now where they're going to play, but that's amazing.
Yeah,
that's absolutely unreal for them.
Men's and women's.
Yeah, the women are on four. The men are on four straight. Yeah, I mean that's nuts. Talk about entire classes come and play a full college career and don't win the tournament. I mean that's something else.
Yeah, good for them. Pretty cool. Congrats to both Doms, Dom and Dominic, and
all the Doms.
They're great guys and they've done an amazing job. You know, and it shows what you can do when you have a good coaching staff and you got the best facility in the league. So,
it's a great facility.
It's a great facility, and they take advantage.
I hadn't been to an outdoor one until last weekend, and that's really great outdoors.
It's a nice
indoors. I think it's better for the fans, but for photography, the outdoors was awesome.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's cool. But so.
Good to see them keep on winning. I know I saw a note that Arkansas cut both their men's and women's tennis programs last week. And you want to talk about nice facilities. What they had was pretty impressive. So,
isn't that amazing? I think what a lot of the teams that are doing these sorts of things are turning them into – I don't think they're cutting them like they're not going to have it at all. I think they're turning them into basically non-scholarship sports. Like they're – No scholarships and reduced level, obviously, or something like that. It seems to be what is going through the wire around. That's happened in some places. Kind of wrestling has done that in some places.
Yeah. That's why I continue to tell our fans that if there's a program you like at ODU, go to the games. Attend, show up, donate to them, because it's the landscape continues to change in college athletics, and there could be some tough decisions ahead, and we're not exempt from that by any means.
Nope, without a doubt. It is the situation we are currently in, and people are spending more money and they're not bringing in any more money, and so
we
got to get it from somewhere, and it's unfortunate for sure. I baseball is certainly not immune to that. I unfortunately think that in the Northeast, that's going to be a decision that some people are going to come to, especially if you're a school. Mike and I were talking about this on our 1,000 mile ride home. If you're a school that's good in hockey, for instance, and you're getting a couple, 2,000-3,000 plus for hockey, and then you're getting 3 and 5 people for a baseball game where it's
'cause it's 20 degrees outside most of your season.
And it's just like, where do you want to allocate your resources,
Yeah.
On the men's side. So that could – it's going to be interesting. I mean, I think, the 5-for-5 thing that's going to get voted on here in May, going to change the landscape. I was talking to a high school coach friend of mine this afternoon. and we were talking about high school kids, and he's got a – pretty good rise. He's pretty good junior. And it's just like now this 5-for-5 is going to hit again and everybody's going to get another year. And then what are the high school kids? This is like the fifth year in a row, something like that.
Yeah.
So you got like,
I think the thing with this one is it may not affect the current seniors. That's the thing I keep seeing is that it might be
fair at all to me.
It seems weird. Yeah.
Randomly pick one class.
people
and exclude them.
It would make more sense to almost say if you're in college right now, it doesn't affect you. Just take everybody and then say all the incoming freshmen is where it starts would make more sense. But
I guess they're saying, you know, the seniors are graduating, you know, potentially. Yeah.
I mean, if you think about like a football, any of the fall sports, they've already gone through their portal. They've already gone through. They've given away all their scholarship money. NIL.
I think that's another reason. Yeah, I think that definitely is another reason. So that could very well be. And then you know, your juniors are going to have 2 more years. Your sophomores are going to have 3 more years. Your freshmen are going to have 4 more years. You know, you think about kids like Nick Felton, who's just starting to figure it out and play really well.
Yeah.
You know, I think he had his best weekend of the season, obviously, with the 2 homers yesterday. He's got 4 more years.
Yeah. It's not 10. Well, I think part of it, too, is they're talking about doing like it's a one-time transfer portal. You can't
one time
do every single year.
Yeah, without sitting.
Yeah. So with that, and that would, I think at that point, I don't know what your feelings are. I haven't, you know, obviously sat and thought long about it, but it seems to me like 5 years in 5 years, and so that's no more extending, you know, nothing in their 7th year. And that one-time transfer, that kind of makes it to where you actually could bring kids in, develop them. You don't worry about if you want to play a freshman some early on, you play them, you know, here and there. You're not worried about killing their year of eligibility because it's going to go away no matter what.
Yep.
I mean, it seems to me like it could it has – it almost makes a lot of sense, so it feels like they're not going to do it or they'll mess it up somehow.
Yeah, because I hate the current rule. If you play a kid at all,
right,
you lose the year if he's not hurt in baseball. I mean, it's like football now.
Football, you get half the season.
Yeah, which, I mean, come on. Nice. But it gives you an opportunity to get that kid in there and get some experience and not lose it. And so I like the thought of that, you know. Yeah. And you know, as the kids develop at different rates, certainly.
Yeah. And the idea of a one-time portal is good because, I mean, you know all the time there are guys who, after a year or two, it's like, hey, man, we like you. You're a great kid. This just isn't the spot for you.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And it's not necessarily about all the kids that are going and chasing money. It's about the kids that's like, hey, we want you to be able to go somewhere and find your level and find your place.
Yep.
Yeah, the other side of the equation would be interesting too, because you don't have that option to hop in the portal. You may be stuck with some guys on your roster for longer if maybe they're not the caliber to come and play or there's some other issues. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see if there's going to be some carve-outs for that, for coaching changes and things like that too. But I wouldn't mind some guardrails because it went from you can't move at all to go to a different school every year for 20 years. Yeah. And I think like somewhere in the middle is actually where the right answer is there. And this at least get us towards that.
Well, yeah, there's no doubt. And you know, it went from you're stuck with a portal kid forever till he graduates to don't worry about it. Now you're going to be stuck with a portal kid again. So you better evaluate it the right way.
Yeah.
Count against you until he graduates, no matter where he goes. And so, yeah, it's I'm hopeful. We had a long recruiting meeting today. I'm hopeful that we're not going to be in the portal a ton this summer. We've done pretty well. You know, our high school guys have been signed for a while, but we've done pretty well with some pretty good junior college kids we've gotten recently, and I'm excited about that. And it may be like one hitter and one or two pitchers maybe. So I like the thought of that because you can really zero in. It's an inexact science no matter you know, how you scramble.
Well, you currently have a lot of, especially pitching-wise, a lot of good young guys. And, like, they're freshmen, redshirt freshmen, sophomores. There's a certain amount of depth there already. So that's kind of a nice position to be in.
Yeah. And, you know, Van Alstine will be back next year. He's redshirt this year with the Tommy John surgery. And, you know, Cuskey and Gaddy will be back. I mean, they're getting better. Like, Gaddy Cuskey was really good on Friday. The guy's strike zone was so daggum small, man. It cost him a ton of pitches, you know. But he's thrown, you know, he's had 4 quality starts in a row. And Gaddy up until there had four in a row. He'd been throwing the ball better. Those guys are getting better. I think next year, you know, a lot of times transfers, it's that second year where you really see. I mean, you think about guys like Sam Armstrong. Sam was just okay his first year, like very pedestrian. And then he was absolutely dominant his second year. John Hollibetz was kind of the same way. So
I think you said it one time with a transfer or JUCO, you basically get 1 year out of them. It's a question if it's the first year and they're great and get drafted, or if they're the first year they're okay, and then the second year they're great.
Yeah, so and now you might
pretty
get
accurate.
Yeah, if they got three instead of two, you might get two. So that's a good thing, you know. Like Will Johnson, I think, is another good example. You know, Will struggled a little bit. You know, the first part of the season, and he has just really played well the last 3 or 4 weeks, both offensively and defensively. He's really picked it up a notch, I think. So that's a good thing. So, and they'll, you know, Will just needs strength like a lot of them. He was a product of being at a place where he redshirted his freshman year and they didn't care. And then he went to junior college and didn't lift and probably didn't eat right. And he's probably 15 pounds lighter than he would be if he had been here the whole time. So he can work on that this summer though. And, I think 15 pounds would make a big difference for a guy.
He can hang out with me. I'll put 15 pounds on
him. Yeah, me too.
Just follow my diet. We got it.
Me too.
I was going to say steak, potato, and iron. That's about the recipe this summer for him.
Yeah. Yeah, Nick Felton, another example. Like he needs to work hard, put on weight this summer, and I'm really proud of Nick. He's coming along, you know, with the bat, having better at bats and playing fantastic in center field as well.
Now, is Nick? I mean, it might be a later conversation, but is Nick the kind of guy you're going to have play summer ball somewhere, or he's going to focus on maybe him just working out and getting stronger in the summer?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think. If it is, it might be just part of the summer. Mm-hmm. We may send him out to get – we'll see how many at-bats he ends up with.
Yeah.
You know, these freshmen, a lot of times, if they get – you know, I don't know how many he's got right now, but if they get, you know, over 100 at-bats per se, they go out and play in the summer and all summer, and they come back just dog-tired. And
yeah.
It doesn't help them develop. Like Nick, he does need to keep working on his swing and his approach and some of those things, but he needs strength more than anything. And so I think that'll be something we'll address that. We don't have in place right now because we weren't just sure. Every kid's a little bit different, you know. Tyler Zadalis is a good example. Like he likes to play. He's going to go play. He's strong.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. He's fine.
Yeah. guys like that. So we kind of take each of those a little bit differently when we look at each guy towards the end of the year.
Yeah. Well, on the topic of eligibility, I think we all saw the post from Luke before the weekend. It sounds like that potential extra year is not going to happen. At least it seems that way.
No, he got that denied, and you know, I hated that they kept the kid in limbo and us for so long. That was kind of weak, in my opinion. It was very weak, actually. They should be ashamed of themselves for that. It should have been much more cut and dry. And, you know, you live and you learn. It's just you see these guys thinking they're going to get, you know, talking about getting their – but the one quarterback from Ole Miss is like got an injunction by the Mississippi Supreme Court for his seventh year or whatever it is. It's like, come on.
All different rules for football.
But that's where the 5-for-5 thing will clean up a lot of that as well. You know, you don't have to go down that street.
Yeah. Hate it for Luke. I'm sure he would have liked one more season just to kind of bounce back from last year, but obviously appreciate everything he did for the program. His dad Roger is awesome. You know, I saw him at several games this year. Yeah, I mean, whole family is awesome. His sister's a pretty accomplished athlete too. So sad to see that journey come to an end, but I think he's made some connections for life that will be beneficial for him.
He's working in compliance, helping them out, and you know, working on his master's. He wants to be a coach, I think, and you know, great kid and had a good career here. So
yeah,
you know, that was good. And you know, unfortunately, you know, just didn't get that last year. We could have used him in lineup this year too.
Yeah.
Adding that one more bat sometimes can make a big difference. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, talk a little bit about last week. I know we're all still kind of a little green in the gills from the way Sunday ended. I know you all had a late night, early morning getting back in, but honestly, I think you outplayed them for pretty much the entire series. Just a little bit of a headache we ran into there in the ninth inning on game three.
Yeah. You know, and it overshadows. I thought we did play well. We didn't play poorly on Saturday. We just, you know, they took advantage of, you know, some dirt balls, pass balls. It was sloppy on the mound. I thought Gaddy was just, you know, it was a mess out there, actually. And then, you know, it's the way series go when your pitching is limited, which both our staffs were, numbers wise of quality guys, you know, you win on Friday and you get behind, you know, by six or whatever on Saturday, like you're going to punt. I mean, unless you're going to throw guys, you know, the down bullpen guys, and they just got to go out there and do the best they can unless you get back in it, and then it could change. And
I mean, you can see they did that on Friday.
They did that same on Friday.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's a tale of two completely different but the same games on opposite sides, right? And then when that happens, when you don't play a close one either Friday or Saturday, both teams end up with their better bullpen guys for Sunday. So then Sunday ends up being the close one. And, you know, it's just how it works, man. We outplayed him for 25 outs, and you got to outplay him for 27 outs, especially on the road.
Yep.
And that's unfortunate. So, you know, give them credit. I like their club. I thought I think they are limited on the mound and the number of pitchers they have. And but they got, you know, they catch the ball deep. Their third baseman is a phenomenal player.
Yeah,
McGinnis, Wills.
Well, then Beverly, the center fielder, is really good too.
Yeah, and Beverly can play. He can be pitched too. He can really run.
Yeah,
he knows. You give him some credit. He knows what he is. He tries to chop the ball and run, and he covers a lot of ground in the center. But their leadoff guy, I mean, their third baseman, he must have made 15 or 16 assists on the weekend. Like, and he made every one of them look easy. And he's got a good arm, good body. I was very impressed with him. And, you know, when you're coaching third, you spend a little bit of time talking sometimes to third baseman if you like him. And he's a very he's a very likable kid, very respectful, good kid, good competitor. And, of course, he hit the walk-off to beat us too, you know.
Yeah.
But that's how it goes. I mean, we've walked a couple people off this year. It sucks on both sides of it. When you win, it's great. When you lose, it stinks. And – I've been through a bunch of them, unfortunately. Well, the ones we lost were unfortunate. The ones we won were great.
Yeah.
There's a Stoic saying that says, no man is crushed by the fortunes of defeat unless he's puffed up by the fortunes of victory. So we try to stay somewhere in the middle, and we just got to get back to work. We did play good baseball for the most part. You know, we caught the ball on defense. And you know, through strikes. And I thought, you know, yesterday Okonkwo again, you know, three quality innings, gets us into the game. He had a good week, you know,
he did
quality innings against East Carolina and then three against Georgia State. We thought we were going to need to get Kellen into that game earlier, being fresh to keep us in it, knowing what we had in their lineup, and it worked. He did a good job. I mean, gave up the one home run, but, you know, then three, and then Bailey came in, who did a good job. And, yeah, certainly, you know, if you had a crystal ball and you knew what was going to happen, we'd have run Bailey back out there for the ninth, but that's not how it works. So,
yeah, I mean, I think that's one that, you know, it's easy to second guess because it didn't work. You know, if Nick goes out and it's 1-2-3, you don't think anything about it.
Yeah.
But it's I guess
that's baseball.
Yeah, that's baseball. Yeah. I mean, was there even a thought in the moment of like we should throw Bailey out, or are you just like, no, Nick's got this?
I think we just said, hey, we need Baylor for if we wouldn't have had to bring him in the seventh.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Kellen was out of gas after the sixth.
Yeah, I think
we talked about it. We'll let him go out and try to get, you know, see how we could. When he's out of gas, everything's up. The breaking ball's up, and he walks the first guy, and then we got Bailey. I think
not a good play. Get you ball up either.
Yeah. So, and Bailey came in, did a good job. He got us out of both of those innings, but yeah, it just is what it is, man. I'll take full responsibility for it because it.
I would have made the same moves. That's
maybe
the thing.
We should have said. Maybe we should, and maybe next time we will, you know, maybe we should have said, hey, let's let him go out and start it and see how he does. And then we can get Nick in behind him if he doesn't have it. I tend to like guys coming into clean innings out of the bullpen if possible, unless they have strikeout stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If they've got strikeout stuff, you don't worry about it as much, but some guys, you know, you can help them. If you're going to bring them in anyway, it's just easier on them mentally, I think, to start in clean than come in with a bunch of traffic. And so that's usually what I'm in favor of if we can work it out that way. It just didn't work out, you know. And the guys, I tell them all the time, like, you know, somebody says, oh, that was a good move. And I go, it's only a good move if you guys make it good. You guys are the ones that make good or bad. It's not the move is the move. If you guys go up, you know, you pinch hit and the guy gets a hit, and then it's a great move. Way to go, coach. You know, yeah. And if you strike out, you big dummy, what are you hitting that guy for? You know,
yeah. See, and that's always my problem is that people want to judge the result. And to me, it's like you judge what the logical choice was in the moment. And logical choice in that moment, it's like, you could have let Bailey go back out, but how many times has he thrown more than two innings in his whole career at Old Dominion, especially this year? I don't think he has it all. And so Nick was just coming off a week where he was great. You know, it's like I even said, like, we're going through the game. I'm like, who's still out in the bullpen? Like, okay, Sulpizio, all right, throw him in the ninth. Boom. It's like it's the moves in the moment are logical. That's the thing. When it's a bad move when it doesn't make any sense.
Right. Yeah, for sure. So we just got to get past it, man. And I think this group will. They know what they got to play for. And, you know, we talked. I said, man, there ain't nothing I can say to you guys right now that's going to make you feel any better. No. Nobody here is going to feel good on this bus ride home. We just got to move past it, get to the next most important thing. That's the definition of mental toughness. And we still got what we need to do in front of us. You're coming home for the next five games. And, you know, you got to find a way to definitely win that series this weekend. And if you play like you've been playing, you can. And so that's just how we got to look at it. You got to put the past behind you, as Rafiki said in Lion King.
And the way that everything else played out this weekend, you're one game out of being in potentially a sixth seed, like in a big tie for sixth. Mm-hmm. You're two games out from being the five seed. So, like, yes, you lost the game, you lost the series, but it's not like you got swept or and you're out of it. Like, you know, you saw Georgia Southern, the wheels kind of fell off for them this past weekend. So JMU, I think they won a game in that series, but you still have, you know, even a top six seed is still right there. You can focus on that for your remaining nine conference games.
Yeah, without a doubt. And in particular, the team we're playing this weekend, Ark State, game ahead of you. All right, so if you beat them the series, your records will be the same, but you'll be ahead of them because you have a tiebreaker over them. And so those tiebreakers are definitely going to come into play. You can see it coming.
It's going to be wild because they're going to have to go 3, 4, 5, 6 team tiebreakers going on. I mean, it's jam-packed.
I know, and that's where we could get screwed because we only got a tiebreaker over Georgia Southern right now. But look, Georgia State ain't got an easy. I mean, they got to go to Louisiana this week, who's fighting for their lives. Yeah. And that ain't ever an easy place to play, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I forget who they do have Georgia Southern in there, but I forget who they finished with. Somebody else pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So, and everybody has to still play each other, right?
Like, yeah.
So not like everybody's sitting there idle and you're winning or losing. Like, they're playing each other and they're moving themselves up and down the standings as well. So you just got to take care of yourself and try to play good baseball. And, you know, we did this weekend. And so I was proud of that. And I'm also happy that I never have to go play on that field again, ever. Forever and ever.
That's an interesting looking place.
Yeah, it's a bad junior college field at best. But we went by and hit their indoor cages Saturday because it was raining before the game, and saw the lot, you know, it's cleared and they're moving dirt around. They got some poles.
Yeah, old Turner Field.
Yeah. They got a ways to go. In old
Fulton County.
Fulton County Stadium right there. But it's going to be a cool venue, I think. You know, I think it's going to be way better than what they're doing. And, you know, it's probably, I don't know, a quarter mile away from where their locker room and everything is. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have a hitting place to hit there, but their locker room is going to still be in the old Turner Field where it is now. Mm-hmm. And it's the old Braves locker room. It's awesome.
That's cool.
No, yeah, I've been down there. That's nice. That was 25 years ago.
You're going to have to get in your car and drive over to the field from the locker room to the field because you can't walk. It's not like walking right across the street.
Yeah, they're going to be kind of set up there because they have the new basketball facility on one side of that parking lot. You walk across, it'll be new baseball in the old Turner Field, which is now Center Park where they play football. Yep. Mm-hmm. So they've got it set up and they built up around it. So, I mean, they're trying to give a campus field.
They got a public.
Yeah, it's all the dorms. Yeah.
It is going to be a pretty good setup, without a doubt. So we'll see how it ends up.
If you play football and nobody comes to watch, are you playing football? That was sad to see. Yeah.
It's kind of a mess. They've tried to make it look smaller. But I get it for them. I mean, it made sense to do it, and I'm sure they're getting kickbacks from the city to keep it up and stuff like that and all of that. So it makes sense.
What a wild life for that stadium. You went from the Olympics to the Braves stadiums and now a football stadium.
It was only the Braves home field for 20 years, right?
Like yeah, 20, yeah. I saw the first game ever there as an exhibition against the Yankees. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's like got to be one of the shortest lifespans of a baseball stadium ever, if not the shortest. It has to be.
It's that and the shortest. Rangers. Those are the only two that I can think of.
Because that was about the Globe Life. It was about the same time, wasn't it? Or the one before Arlington.
They needed to put a roof and air conditioning on that thing because you'd be baking in 100-degree afternoon games in July and August.
Yeah. Well, hey, how about Nick Felton getting a little power surge yesterday?
It's a good thing he did it there because I don't know if you saw the distances. They weren't going to make it at ODU.
No, I didn't see him. What were they?
It was like 385 and like 390. Like they were the one to center field wasn't going to cover, and the one to right center wasn't going to cover. But he hit it in the right. He did it in the right place.
Yep.
So.
That's great. When he starts feeling himself, we will absolutely.
Yeah. They got the little graphics they put out now with all the info. Yeah, they look great.
That is cool. Yeah, and both of them, you know, scraped some paint off the back of the fence.
Yes. They were long flyouts. At ODU.
Five RBIs worth, and we needed them. Yeah. So that was huge for us. And I thought Nick had good at bats this weekend. He's getting better. And man, I tell you what, it's like having a good shortstop. You know, when you got a center fielder that just when it's hit, he catches everything. Like, you know, it's like the what was the old saying, the two thirds
of the plants covered by water. The rest is covered by Nick Felton. You probably didn't see, but last week on the podcast at the very end before he and TJ left, Nick made sure to mention how much he loves mom's cookies. And I was watching the game yesterday with my parents and my mom after the first leg. He's getting cookies next weekend.
Oh, so, yeah. See, got that to look smart, forward. Too. He knows how to get cookies.
He does. That was good.
Oh, we were ready to come in hot and heavy today with the podcast boost because TJ hits one out on Friday, then Nick hits two out.
Yeah.
Oh man, I was glad to see TJ finally get into one because I think he's been in his head at the plate.
He's been struggling, but hopefully he can keep working through it and come back out on the other side of it. We can sure use it. And you know, I think it's probably time to start thinking about moving Nick up in the lineup and seeing how he can do these last few weeks at the top of the lineup.
He can always move guys over with bunting, which is great.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, F is such a good hitter. I feel like we're he gets on base, but he can't run. He's not a runner. Yeah. you know, he's running hard. He's just those little
He looks like Mario when he's like tiny Mario before he gets the mushroom.
Great at bats. I feel like if we can stick him in the middle somewhere, we need some more RBI production in the middle.
Yeah.
And so I think we're going to play around with that tomorrow. I think, you know, these next two midweek games, you're always trying to win, but they're irrelevant in the big scheme of things for us right now.
It's nice to beat the Virginia teams. That's about it.
It is. You just, you know, these games this time, everybody's in the same boat. Like you got to save all your bullets for the weekend because everybody's trying to make their tournament and,
Absolutely. Or
win, you know, all those things. And so, you know, you end up throwing some other guys, and we got some guys that need to throw. Like Lanford needs to get out there. Sulpicio needs to get back out there. Jack and Cavalcante need to keep pitching. Mm-hmm. Another good thing, you know, that came back, getting Pat Johnson out there for an inning on Saturday.
Yeah.
For a month, and he threw well. He looked good. Felt good after. So that's a nice arm to get back in the mix. And then I think next Tuesday, not this Tuesday, we'll have Baines.
Deal. So, yeah, I was talking to him last weekend about that. So that'd be a big addition at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we're probably just open him next Tuesday so he didn't have to come into anything. He can go through his whole routine, throw an inning or two and get out of there. And then we'll see where he's at for the weekend at Coastal. So lots to play for. Exciting time.
Yeah. Well, your note on Nick Felt will make Bo happy because within 4 seconds of that second home run going out, I got a text. Hey, can you ask Finney if he thought about moving Nick up in the lineup? And I was like, I don't know, but we'll find out.
all on you, Bo. I'm going to tell him, Bo, that's a great idea. I would have never thought of it. So,
yeah.
But we got the Rams, Rams tomorrow night, and hopefully people come out and they're having a good year. I saw Richmond just beat them 2 out of 3 this weekend on 8-10 play. So I don't know where that puts them in their league. But Richmond's having a pretty good year in 8-10. I think they're 13-9 maybe or something like that. They're 12-9.
Yeah, VCU had gone through a little bit of a rut. They had lost, I think, six in a row going into that. Into that game. Like they beat Virginia, and they didn't win again until they beat Richmond.
Okay.
So, but they're still very much in the mix there at the top. I think there's a couple decent teams actually fighting at the top of the A-10.
I think the A-10 only takes like 6 teams to their tournament, though, if I'm not mistaken. So
it's a small group for sure.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, for sure. All right, guys. Well, I appreciate you. Right, thanks for moving this up today. And go Monarchs.
Go Monarchs. Thanks, Finny.
See ya.
Later. The Old Dominion Athletic Foundation, or commonly referred to as the ODAF, was established in 1964 as a nonprofit organization. The mission of the ODAF is to raise financial support for ODU athletics to ensure that our coaches and student athletes have the resources necessary to compete for championships. The ODAF is integral to the success of ODU athletics and is the channel through which our fans and alumni can partner with our coaches and student athletes for the advancement of the athletics program. Through the generous efforts of our donors, loyal fan base and community, the ODU alumni from around the globe, the ODAF raises money for student athletic scholarship support and endowments, capital projects, program-specific support, and athletic department operations. Funds are raised through annual giving, multi-year pledges, events, premium seating, and planned giving. With questions about how to get involved in one or more of these initiatives, reach out to an ODAF representative. Gifts to the ODAF are investments in the lives of our student athletes. ODAF members receive exclusive benefits such as priority points for postseason and away game seating, parking, VIP, and hospitality experiences, and more. Because of you, we create winners in the classroom, in athletic competition, and in life. Contact the ODAF and become a member today.
There you go.
Thanks, Blaine.
Yeah, thanks, Blaine. Welcome back to Huds and Homers, everybody. A little slight schedule change for us this week. Finney had to go a little bit earlier. Guys didn't get back home until about 3:30 in the morning. So since the players have a game on Tuesday, we're not going to make them more tired than they probably already are after a really tough.
And finals this week, too. So.
Oh, yeah. That little part too with that. But we figure we will just start out with our players of the week this week.
Hey, look at those guys. Couple of freshmen. Not too bad when your freshmen are leading things this late in the year. It means they're stopping to be a freshman, huh?
Yeah.
So Jackson Okonkwo, he was our pick. He had a good week. If you remember, he started the game on Tuesday against East Carolina. He was about the only guy that pitched well that night. Well, Urusi came in late and pitched well. I will say that. But Okonkwo, so he had two games through six innings total, one earned run, six hits, a walk, two strikeouts. So he just came in, just threw some good innings. Other guys that pitched well, Ben Tanton in the game on Friday, the win down there, four scoreless, two hits, two walks, six strikeouts. That was probably his best performance of the year, to be honest. He's had some good. We'll talk in a minute. He's had some good ones. Kuski had another very nice start, as Finney pointed out. Four innings, two runs, three hits, three walks, five Ks. And Bailey Metella came in, was great there at the end. Two innings, no hits. I'm sorry, no hits, no runs, no walks, two strikeouts. I mean, that was just, when Bailey is on, that's when they start. If people might not be able to hear, but a thing that our guys do is sometimes when Bailey's coming out, they call out Bally, because that was down in Southern Miss. He came into a game. It was tight one. I think it was the Saturday game, and they threw. I think he threw like three straight balls to the first guy, and then you hear the fans all Bally instead of Bailey, and then I think he struck that guy out, and then he dominated. That's where that picture you actually keep sharing on Twitter of Bailey shouting after getting the third strike of that inning. So that's one that when he's on, that's when our guys really start yelling Bally.
It's my favorite picture of Bailey ever. Yeah. He's just so gassed up coming off the mound.
Yeah. Bailey's not a very emotive guy in his day-to-day life and really not much on the mound. That was definitely one of the few times where you really got him like, man, he was hype. So that was a cool one.
That's why I keep using that one. If it's JJ Gaddy, I got that one covered. I've got a dozen of those. But
when you do the taking the pictures, that there's some guys. I was trying to get Tanton last week, and I was like, "Watch!" I think I was saying to whoever's standing next to me, I was like, "Watch! He's going to turn and just walk right back. He's going to strike me out." He struck him out, and just walking back. Like it's like, okay, it's like, hey, you know what? I don't mind if that's what you need, but for photography's sake, it's really cool when they shout and scream and look like they're having fun.
Yeah, Tan's just a stone cold assassin when he's up there. He is all business, just going to blow stuff by you.
He is. The baby-faced assassin, that's for sure. He's in the crib with a little gun just poking out of the crib. Yeah, that is Ben Tanton. So then for our hitters, I think we all know. Now, my mom, again, when I was watching the game with my parents yesterday, my mom's like, Nick Felton better be player of the week. And I was like, well, Mom, we got to see. I mean, I don't know. He had two home runs, but for all I know, he was like 2-for-16 for the week. Well, he wasn't. He was 5-for-13. He did have the two homers, had seven RBIs on the week, I think five in that game. Couple of walks, four runs, got hit by a pitch, a sacrifice fly. So just a great all-around week. And as Finney pointed out, just playing phenomenal defense. So I mean, he's really killing it. Shocker, Efren Morales had another great week, 5-for-16, had a double, hit a homer. That's always fun when Eff hits a double and a homer. Four ribbies, scored some runs, got hit by a pitch a couple times. Maverick Stallings had a nice solid week, 5-for-15, double, a homer, four RBIs. Scotty Young was kind of in and out of the lineup, just mostly because lefties pitching. But he was 3-for-10 with a double and RBI. And Brody Connors only had two chances, but he was 2-for-2 with a double and two RBIs. So that's you want to make sure he gets some love for a guy who's. It's not easy to sit on the bench and not play, but like once every four or five games and come out there and take your at bats.
I got to watch
some good hitting performances.
I got to watch him take some batting practice last weekend when they were at home. And dude can piece up some baseballs. I mean, he's got good exit velo. He's got good launch angle, all those things. He probably just needs reps. But, I mean, it's a little tough to get into that infield right now with the way that Will, Mav, and Tyler are playing right now.
Yeah, Brody's a dog, man. It's one of those things that sometimes you look at it and, maybe is he going to get a shot next year? Might have some, differences in the lineup. Maybe he goes and plays some outfield too. I don't know, but – he can play third. He can play second. I think he's obviously better at third, and you can see him playing first and playing the outfield. And I mean, he can play. That's for sure. One thing I know about Brody, that dude can hit. He's a ball player. But I did say I was telling you. So I pulled together some stats and some guys from they're recently been hot. So Nick Felton, talking about his last nine games. So before his last nine games, he was hitting for the season 171 with a 447 OPS. So, you know, freshman struggling, right? Last nine games, he is hitting 379 with a 1,041 OPS. So 455 on base, 585 slugging, right? 11 for 29, two homers, 11 RBIs, four sacrifices and a sac fly. I kind of picked since that was about the Sunday game of Marshall, which I think was the weekend where he started bunting so much. Uh-huh. And that's when he picked up a couple of hits in that game. So that's, again, just to let you know, if it feels like he's been doing really well, it's because he's been doing really well.
Yeah, and I mean, he's having the two home runs on Sunday obviously helps that, but it probably would have helped him more if he would have gotten the double on this walk-off too. So
yeah,
that would have helped. But yeah, I mean, he's just the way he's turned it on. And yes, the curtain fell. What is that, the 40-minute mark here? So curtain's down for those of you betting at home.
Curtain's down. Ephraim Morales, again, another guy we know, he's been hot lately. And you know, to say he started out slowly, right? So I'm looking back to his last 15 games. This is basically all of April. So pretty much before April, hitting 297, which isn't bad, had a 733 OPS, right? Because he has a high on base 409, but a 324 because he had to get like one double before that. So his last 15 games, which again pretty much since from April on, he's hitting 375 with a 950 OPS.
Whew.
Right, so 481 on base, which again it doesn't walk a ton. I mean, his difference between his on base and his batting average is less than 100. But a 469 slugging, which again, you know, Efren's not a big time doubles home run guy yet. I think he's going to become one. I think if you see it here, is he getting better? But yeah, so over that stretch, 24 for 64, three doubles, a homer, 11 RBIs, 10 walks, three hit by pitch, right? I mean, so he's 12 runs, pretty much all hitting to the top of the order. You know, Efren's been, now that once he got healthy, he's been killing it.
Yeah, it'll be curious to see what happens. You know, where does Nick Felton fit in the top five, six spots in the lineup that Finney was talking about? Because I mean, kind of indicated that, you know, he'd like to get F into more RBI situations, right? Because he is a little bit slower on the base paths. Yeah. He's also had, I don't know how many balls that are hit 390, 395 to dead center at the Bud that would have been home runs at Georgia State and some other places. So that'll be curious to see how that fits in. But, man, you've got some young guys that are just doing some serious damage on the offensive side of the ball.
Well, and speaking of a young guy doing some serious damage on the pitching side of the ball, I was going to say defensive, but it's pitching side. Ben Tanton, again, another guy I think, you know, he probably could have won the award again this week, could have won the award last week. I think we didn't give it to him either week, but he really could have had a stretch of like 5 or 6 straight weeks. I mean, he's angling towards being the best pitcher, the pitcher of the year, to be honest. So Ben, I was looking at his last six appearances. The last six appearances, he has pitched 14 and a third scoreless innings. He had a game against App State. He gave up 5 runs. That's the last time he gave up any runs. And so since then, 14 and a third scoreless, 15 strikeouts in that time, had a 1.13 whip. I mean, so he's been done great. What's funny is if you look before that, so even if you include the App State game, before that, before this 6-game stretch, he had 10 and a third innings, had a 6.10 ERA and a 0.97 whip. So he still wasn't giving up a lot of hits and walks. He just kind of, when they were hitting them, they were scoring. And this is what I think it's interesting because it's like, well, take out the guy's worst game. What was the season look like, right? Which, again, you can't do that. He had to pitch that one game. But so if you take out that one appearance against App State where he gave up 5 runs in an inning and a third, his season would be 23 innings, only 2 earned runs, 22 strikeouts. So we'd have a 0.78 ERA and a 0.91 whip. I mean, that's to tell you that Ben, I mean, that's you know, because he gave up 2 runs in another appearance, which again, that just happens. The 5-run game was just a bad one. I mean, this kid has been phenomenal as a freshman. And that just tells you, really illustrates, again, if you take out the one bad game, like he has been dominant. I mean, that's impressive for a kid who's, I mean, having the guy, he's the first guy out of the bullpen on Fridays when you're trying to win the series. That says a lot about a kid.
Yeah, I mean, he's been impressive. And like we were talking about earlier, he's just cool, calm, and collected. He is up there. It's a business trip to the mound for him, and it's paid off in a big way. I mean, 1.07 whip for the season is pretty nuts. The fact that 5 of his 7 earned runs were just in one outing against App State, which By the way, App State is tied for second right now in the Sun Belt standings.
And they can hit.
Southern Miss. Yeah, they're kind of sneaky. I think their RPI is somewhere around 37. So you want to talk about a potential at large team, App State. So it makes losing that series feel a little bit better. It's still not great, but at least, you know, if we would have lost the series to Georgia Southern, who's now 5-16 and only has 12 wins on the season, be a little bit more upsetting. But I mean, Ben, like, there's very few guys I think in that bullpen when I see them come into the game, I'm like, all right, we're good.
Ben is
one of them.
That guy
and
right now.
Yeah. He's a freshman, and it's wild that he's doing this so early in his career.
He's leading the team in ERA right now at 2.55. He's got six wins. No one else has more than two. I think he's like fourth or fifth on the team in innings right now, I think. But I mean, that might just keep going up and up as the season goes on. You know, it just comes from being a freshman to start out and going kind of slow, as now he's eating up three and four innings every time out. Yeah, it's really fun to see these guys who are young. I mean, that's the upside of having a inconsistent season, is that lots of opportunities for guys to prove themselves. Lots of opportunities for guys to prove themselves in a bad way, unfortunately. But lots of opportunities for guys to prove themselves. And that's what we're seeing, I think, with Felton and Okonkwo and Tan and Morales. We already knew he proved himself last year. We knew that he's had to get healthy.
Yeah, just needed him to be healthy for an extended period of time. And I could be wrong on this. I'm trying to look it up before I say something dumb. But I'm pretty sure that the runs that Ben gave up to App State were also the first time and only time he has started this year. So,
was it a start? I didn't realize that. Okay.
I believe, because pretty sure it was my idea when I asked Vinny the question of like, hey, have you thought about moving Ben Tanton into a starter role? Pretty sure it's one of our YouTube shorts that's out there. Well, that did not work very well, just for the record.
Well, again, I think it will. I think Ben has got to be, you know, right up there with Okonkwo and Gaddy and Kusky when you talk about next year, guys who have options to be a starter. But again, when you're that good of a reliever, let's see.
Yeah,
where is it?
He threw four innings
game started. Yep, that was his one start of the season. You're correct. So that was I think I was right there with you chanting that too. So it's not like, you know, and Finney's gonna do whatever he's gonna do. Us talking to the podcast, is he walks up with us on Mondays, already know what's gonna happen.
We didn't actually the decision was already made, just made it easier for him to answer the question because he already
knew.
But Ben's been fantastic, and I think like if you want to look for someone who's gonna do some damage for a couple years to come at ODU, he's the one. For sure, now that I'd be like, yep, keep an eye on him. Okonkwo, I thought was great too. I mean, the wheels fell off when he came out of the game, but people forget it was 1-0 through three against East Carolina on Tuesday.
Yeah,
you give up 8-run inning and a 7-run inning after that. It was pretty tough.
Yeah, I mean, all I can say about that night is it was cool to see Boucher talk to him for a minute. And it was cool to see Austin Irby from Cox back home. He had a big day, and he had three hits. He was complaining at first base at the end of the game. He was warming up. So I missed that perfect game by that one out.
We had some guys put up some good offensive numbers in that East Carolina game, and we put up a 9 spot on them. The pitching just was not there after Okonkwo until we got all the way to Urusi at the end, when inning in a third. Didn't give up anything.
Jay coming off the bench, getting a home run, the first time he'd batted in like 3 weeks. I mean, that was great.
Yeah, happy to see that for Cash too. Because I mean, there's a couple different ways the kids deal with this stuff now. Like one, they just shut down, they go in the tank, and you don't see them in the dugout anymore. And then there's Cash, who's in there hyping guys up, moving equipment around, and just waiting for an opportunity. He got it and cranked it out of the ballpark. So happy for Cash getting at least that moment.
He is a great example of how they have focused on character, and it helps because like I said, that, I mean, you really could, it's very easy to crumble and pout and not care. And you don't see that in Cash. He's the exact, if you weren't looking at the field and just watching the dugout, you'd think it was exact same. He's just there starting every day because he's exactly who he is. He's just a good kid. He cares about his teammates, and he's going to root everybody on. And you need that because right there, there's a chance. You guys, opportunity. He scored the pinch run in the game the week before when Slater drove him in. He pinch ran. I mean, it's so, you know, he's the idea that he could come in games and be useful is not out of the question. Like we know he's got some skills and ability, so it's gonna come up.
Yeah, you never know what's gonna happen in the games going ahead, and especially if you looked at some of our games, we've unloaded the bench a few times, and and all of a sudden the game gets close again and you need those guys subbed in to actually go produce up at the plate. We've seen that a few times too. But you know, want to talk a little bit about Friday. The way I typically listen to our away games is I've got Ted or Andy in my ear, and then I'm watching the ESPN Plus broadcast. For a while there on Friday, I couldn't, so I was listening to Georgia State's ESPN Plus broadcast. I think their announcer said the umpire had a strike zone like a checkerboard, I believe was the terminology he used, which I thought was great. But that really kind of held us down a little bit. I mean, Cuskey ended up with three walks. Tanton and Park both had two walks. But they were on the other side too. I mean, we drew 13 walks in that game.
Yeah.
So clearly something going on there, but our pitching was able to overcome it, get through, get a big win. TJ Akin had the home run, but just kind of dominated them, I feel like, on Friday.
Yeah, that was good. Why don't you move this thing off if we can?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Let the people see our beautiful face. That's okay.
I forgot I was up there.
Yeah. No, it's okay. Yeah, I know. Gary, you're awesome. I would never.
Your curtain, by the way, is completely gone now.
Yeah, curtain is really – it's still hanging by – it's just like my life. It's hanging by a thread. Kuski came in. Like I said, another good start. I think, yeah, again, because of the bad umpire zone, which has happened a lot, that's kind of been what his problem has been all year. He throws a lot of pitches. Finding a way to be more economical is going to help him go later. Because, I mean, it was still only 82, but then at a certain point, it's like, well, 82 – when you're having to fight in every single 82 over the course of four is almost worse than 84 over the course of five or six, because it's like every at bat is like 7-8 pitches.
Yeah. We had some longer offensive innings too during that stretch. We think we only put up six runs, but we left quite a few on base, and there's some longer innings there for him.
And then Ben came out and was phenomenal. I mean, that was, again, probably his best outing of the year. And Jace Park, after not pitching very well on Tuesday, I mean, I remember he came in and just did not look good. Yeah, which is a shame because Jace has been pretty phenomenal for a big part of the year. But coming back and throwing well to finish that game was nice because, you know, Jace is an important part of the bullpen. He's been a guy kind of right there when Tanton comes out and then Park comes out, you know, depending on the score. He's a guy you need to – again, have that belief in himself because he's a very good pitcher.
Yeah, he is. He's also a guy that can come back on like a day rest too. So like there's potential that he could have come back on Sunday if we needed it. Mm-hmm. We didn't until like the very, very end on Sunday, but he has that flexibility.
Yeah.
And I think Saturday, the weird thing about the game, obviously we lose 10-4 and we score three of those four runs in the ninth inning. So we weren't necessarily in it, but the ground balls we were hitting in that game, it was insane. I think we ended up with 16 groundouts to 4 flyouts in the game. Mm. So we were making contact. We only struck out 5 times in the entire game. Meanwhile, Friday we struck out 10 times, and Sunday was I forgot what we had on Sunday, but it was 9. Yeah. So we weren't striking out a lot. We were making a lot of good contact. Mm-hmm. I guess you could make the argument, was it because they were up big and they were just throwing a lot of strikes?
Right.
Or were we just able to make good contact? I don't know. But, man, I mean, we hit some seed ground balls that were just right at their really good third baseman, McGinnis. I mean, they defensively played pretty well over the weekend.
And this is the game that I didn't really get to watch. I was off watching Greenbrier Christian and Hickory. Greenbrier Christian, of course, has our good buddy Pat Nichols, former ODU catcher. And Hickory has a kid that's coming to play for us, Jake Cozart, who's injured right now. He's a left-handed pitcher. He's going to be for us, but right now he's DHing. So it was my first time getting to see him. I think I might have seen him a long time ago when he was 14U or something like that. But it was my first time seeing him, at least get to see him play a little bit. And so I was just kind of keeping up. But of course, like, you know, that was a weird game. They ended up, Greenbrier Christian scored 9 runs in the first inning. So that was just an odd one.
Wow.
And they're all, it's high school ball. So you got all the guys talking about, like, both teams have different players who are fighting over girls. And so it's like the first batter of the game gets hit because he maybe stole the pitcher's girlfriend. It's
oh boy.
Just a bunch of high school nonsense in a weird, like 4.5 inning, 11-0 game. So between all that, I'm looking down at my phone just to kind of like in disgust, of course, because the score is not going the way we want it to. You know, one of the better moments of this one, I guess, to see Maddox Jack coming back strong after, again, had a bad outing on Tuesday, and he's been really good. So actually had a couple of bad outings in a row. So seeing him come back and have a good one. And Cavalcante, the same thing, having a nice scoreless inning after having a bad appearance on Tuesday. And then Patrick Johnson coming in after being – I wasn't real sure what his injury – I was talking to him on, I think, Sunday last week, and he said he sounded like he felt really good.
So him coming back, which again, that we kind of forget, that's a guy who was out there throwing, you know, 2-3 innings for us every Friday or Saturday.
He's good. He's also a really good leader on this team. Like we've witnessed a couple things kind of outside the dugout and around there where it just shows that he's a good leader. The guys respect him and listen to him, and he's ultimately leading him in the right way. So we love getting arms back, and I'm not going to lie, I'm pretty excited to get Hunter Baines back in the mix. Not often you can add a, you know, low to mid 90s fastball guy this late in the season.
It might be more like a mid to high 90s, because he kind of was hitting that anyway. And everything I've seen and heard is sounds like now that it's pain free, because he had thoracic outlet syndrome, which I guess was like a nerve in your kind of around your clavicle, I think.
Something to do with blood flow into your arm.
Yeah, like, some of blood flow. It's not
wide enough.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, like, he was talking about, you know, the future, maybe playing pro ball, and he's like, pro teams don't care about it because it's not an arm injury. It's a thing that guys have it all the time and get it fixed. And so that way he was telling me that he's like, you know, as a player, you never really expect to be 100%. You know, you always kind of feel like, yeah, you know, it's like somebody, how do you feel? It's like, I feel good. You know, and what good is like, you know, you're thinking like 85%, you know, 80%. He's like, I didn't realize that my like normal was very, very bad. he said, I feel amazing. He's like, I haven't felt like this since I was like a little kid. And I've seen him out there throwing. I know like one of our student managers was had to help warm him up while somebody else was doing something.
Oh, no.
And he came, I think he said it broke the glove. Like, he's like, it broke my glove. It's like, I almost broke my thumb. He's like, I don't want to ever do that again. I'm so scared. It's like,
of all the guys on the team.
And that's just Hunter just throwing, you know, off the, I mean, I'm back there taking pictures sometimes. I'm like, I know he's going to throw it straight, but oh boy. So he's a guy, and Hunter is one of, we got to get Hunter on here, cause he's one of my favorite guys. He's, I think last year I sat and talked to him about 10, 50 minutes last weekend. Cause I was like, man, we're not hanging out in the outfield like we were every day last year on the road. He's like, yeah, I know. So he's just a good kid. And having him back and actually being healthy for maybe the first time ever. Cause he's had a ton of control issues, but now that you realize, like, well, it's cause he's like, I literally couldn't feel my arm. He's like, I didn't realize, like, I'm throwing the ball, and he's like, I have no idea where it's going. He's like, and you had to, when you're trying to adjust and correct things, and it's like, I don't, and now it's like, oh, he's like, now I know if I let go and it's not right. He's like, oh, I know immediately. He's like, before I didn't know until I saw what the pitch did. It's very, very odd. And so, I mean, that's a guy that if you can have him back, that's like a late season trade if you have him and he's healthy enough to throw some innings.
Yeah, I mean, that's like hell of a deadline acquisition to bring in that dude. Yeah. Like, Mason Miller type coming in there.
Right. I mean, we forget this guy went to IMG. Like, he went to Maryland out of high school originally. I mean, this guy, he's a big time arm. So it could be a nice addition. Hopefully. And again, hopefully for him, never mind the team, just for him, because Hunter is such a good kid.
Yeah, I would love to see him come out and just dominate for a couple of weeks and then kind of see where things go from there in the offseason.
Yeah.
Anytime you can add quality arms this late in the season, knowing that you're going to have a very tough road if you make the Sun Belt tournament, like,
yeah,
I mean, top six is still with a possibility, but the road there is really difficult now. And it's about, like, how do you just secure being the home team for that Tuesday down in Montgomery? Yeah. Cause that's realistically where we're going to land here if we make the tournament.
Yeah. But you've pointed out, we're only a few games away. I mean, I think realistically, I think Finney said 5-4. I think 6-3 is really what you need to do, which 6-3 just gets you to 15-15. It's not even like that'd be the same record we've had. I looked up, we've been 15-15 all 3 years we've been in the Sun Belt, which is interesting. It tells you we're kind of just in the middle of the pack, which again, based on playing in weird stadiums and the amount of like money that is spent on the program is probably accurate, right? I mean, we're not one of these teams, we're not Coastal and Southern Miss where people are putting some money into it. So 15-15 is probably realistically what we should expect. And we're in the fourth best conference in the country. I mean, that's a thing. So
we're power conference here. This is not, this is not like some of the other sports where, you know, we're 8th, 9th, 10th best conference, or basketball, we're like 400th best conference. Like, we're top.
This is a P4 conference. But you know, to go 6-3, if you you could even lose the series to Coastal as long as you don't get swept. If you win the other two and one, again, I hate to look at it. I'm just trying to say realistically, I think go out and beat Coastal. Screw Coastal. They're not that good. They're just a team. We can go out and beat anybody. But just realistically, like, you know, worst case scenario, you know, you can win your two series, not get swept in the series against Coastal, and be 6-3 and be right 15-15 and probably, you know, again, maybe sneak into that sixth spot. I mean, how many teams are really going to be above 500 at the end of the year? It might be a lot. Now, again, we might lose some tiebreakers because we didn't do things right in the first part of the year. But, yeah, I think, again, it's all in front of them. There's 9 games left. There's 11 left in your whole season. Five of those games are against Virginia schools. You got how many of those? 8 of the 11 are at home. I mean, this is all within your grasp. You're playing Arkansas State, which is just one game better than you in conference, playing James Madison, which is one game worse than you in conference. They're teams you can go up against. And again, Coastal, they're not unbeatable. 17-4. People haven't beaten them. They lost one this weekend, right? There's a team. We beat Southern Miss, and they were number 8 in the country. We can do this.
I mean, I think Coastal's lost their Sunday game the last 3 weekends. So you can definitely get one from them. I think if we're talking about going 6-3 down the stretch gets us to 15-15. That puts us right in the mix for 4, 5, 6 potentially in there. Yeah. But I think to get to 6 wins, we are going to have to sweep one of Arkansas State or JMU. Like, you're going to have to get 5 wins from those 2 series and then hope you go get one from Coastal. Then you're there. It's not the end of the world if you're 14-16. You're still going to make the tournament, but that 7-10 range is your ceiling.
Staying out of that Tuesday game. I mean, yeah, we know what's one of our biggest issues, inconsistency this season, right? Mm-hmm. And part of that is on the mound. And part of that comes through the depth. Again, we don't have starters that go deep in the games. We're happy when they get 5 innings, and it doesn't even happen that often. We don't have the depth for playing 6 games or whatever. I mean, what do you got? You play on Tuesday, you gotta play 5 or 6 games to get to the final.
I think the way it plays out is you gotta win the Tuesday game, which is basically a single elimination.
Yeah.
And then if you win your next 2, so you gotta win Wednesday, Thursday, then you get the Friday off.
The Friday. Yeah. Then you have Saturday, which you'd have to win 5 straight if you were gonna win it. If you lost one, it might be 6 or 7.
Yeah,
because if you lost one, that'd be 6, and you lost another one, that'd be 7. Yeah. So I mean it's if you want to go do it from the bottom seeds, it's a lot. Never mind the do or die first game is a lot of pressure.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel pretty confident about our ability now to go and win that game because Cusky Tanton and then somebody else to close it out. And it's,
but again, then you're using those bullets and when are they available again? Right.
Right. And then say, you know, you win that Tuesday, you go into Wednesday, you're going to be playing either the 1 or the 2 seed, right? So you got Coastal or Southern Miss, who's going to throw their aces. And then you can throw Gaddy out there, feel pretty confident with him. You got Bailey and Kellen behind it. Then you got to go win a 3rd game the next day. And that's where it gets a little bit sketchy.
Right.
And if you lose one of those first 2 games of the double elimination portion, I think you add 3 games to your schedule that you have to go and win, which we're yet to see a team in the Sun Belt come close to doing that.
Yeah. Realistically, you want to do everything you can to get in those top 6. That's the and again, it's in front of you. You got 9 games left. I'd say, you know, again, the Coastal ones are the hardest ones, but again, they're just a team. And the other 6 are at home against teams that are right there with you that you could and should beat.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, we swept James Madison last year. I don't see a reason why we shouldn't sweep them again.
On the road last year, too.
On the road last year. Now that they're probably, they're better. 18-24, they're not better.
No, they're about the same. Yeah, they're about the same.
I mean, I was thinking about this the other day because about the new stadium. You know, it's going to come to a point where if a kid chooses James Madison over ODU, it better be just because we didn't even try or care.
They just like purple.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be no real reason in baseball to go play at James Madison when you know, if you got a player, it's like, well, I could go to JMU or ODU. It's like, what are you even talking about? You can play in a nice, beautiful stadium.
Yeah.
Or you can play in kind of a dump in the middle of nowhere for a nothing team.
Yeah, and I mean, JMU is not exactly pouring money into their baseball program right now. Yeah. They're all in on football and basketball, which – to a degree, we are too, but there's a lot more coming for ODU baseball with this new stadium and some new NIL pushes, or rev share, I should say. Monarch Plus is on the way now. But yeah, it'll be interesting. But I do think 5-4 gets you in the tournament, probably in a 7-10 seed. 4-5, you're rolling the dice. You're going to need
a lot of tiebreakers. So it doesn't really, that's not going to work, which again, that just, and again, this is just us talking on the podcast. When it comes to your players and coaches, the same thing I've been saying for a few weeks now, just the pitch in front of you. Mm-hmm. Win this pitch. And you know what? We saw a lot of that this week. We saw a lot of guys not losing the pitch. A lot of guys competing. I mean, the level of competition we've been showing on our guys has been much higher the last few weeks. I mean, you still see every now and then it's like, oh man, why'd you come on? You gotta want that more. But there have been a lot more guys who it feels like are really getting out there and going up and saying, I'm not going to get beat, which is good.
Yeah. I mean, you could see it through and through. And the thing is, if we were playing like this earlier in the season, we'd have a couple more wins, and blowing that game Sunday would not hurt as much as it does.
Right.
But it's wild. Like, we got the first out of that ninth. So all of that, those five runs unfolded there with two outs in the bottom of the ninth. It's just kind of, you could feel it too. Like, it was like a single and then an error got in a second. And then it's a walk and hit by a pitch and a run scores. And, you know, I don't blame Tyler Stott at all. Like, he pitched really well last year. Right. And I guarantee you that batter was like, all right, if he throws me this exact pitch in this exact spot, right, I'm going to crush it. And he got it right there and put it out of the ballpark. So,
yeah, it's frustrating. I don't think nobody's happy about it. But like you said, I mean, when you look back, is that going to be the game you point to that messed things up? I mean, you got plenty of other games you can point to. We're 9-12. That means there are 12 games you can point to. It probably 25 spots in every game you could point to.
And a bunch of those 12 losses, we were not even competitive earlier in the year.
Yeah.
We're down 8-0 in the first.
Right. So. Yeah. How many did you not even start to play until the eighth inning in?
Yeah, so they're playing better baseball. They're getting there. They still have an opportunity to do what they want to do. Like, they could backdoor in there and end up in the fifth seed or something like that. It could happen. Yeah. But we got to
last year, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's, we end up in the top six.
We have to look back at where they were at this point in the year, but I feel like I remember like it being like, hey man, we got to do some winning here, and they did some winning at the very end. They were 15-15.
Yeah,
and it was kind of like, okay, this is like, it feels like. I mean, after the season they were having last year, where they, I mean, if you remember last year, I think they were like 21-31 or something like that last year. I mean, that's, again, the overall record, but then 15-15 in conference, and it felt like, hey, this is a win. So again, you know, it's more inconsistent this year than down, which maybe is better. It's hard to say, but yeah, this is, you can come up with the same result at the end, and it's all in your control.
Yeah, last year we have more pitching depth this year, because last year we couldn't get it out in the midweeks. No. Wasn't even a question. I mean, I watched this meltdown in multiple ballparks. Yeah. So we're at least getting those wins, beating VCU, beating Richmond, and getting one over William & Mary finally after a while of a drought playing against them. Still got a chance. And like the Sun Belt is just going to be wild down the stretch. Like, any of these teams just go in the tank for the last nine games. Everyone's got faults. I mean, Southern Miss, they got a loss to us. App State's got a loss to us. Troy's got a loss to us. South Alabama's got a loss to us. And that's your top five in the conference right there.
If this is surprising to you, go look at the SEC standings. SEC is the top baseball conference, and it's a wood chipper. It's almost the exact same thing. It's a bunch of teams in the middle with, 10-11, 11-10 records, a couple at the top high, a couple at the top by, I think, Clemson was way down at the bottom. And Clemson's a very good baseball program, has been for years. And it's just like, that's just what happens when you have a really good conference, is it's just some teams, a lot of teams that kind of have the same record because they're all beating each other up.
Yeah. I mean, Georgia is leading the SEC right now. They're 13-5 in conference play.
Yeah. 13-5 is get you the leader. Yeah. Okay. That's
And that's an A&M is right there at 12-5. Texas is 11-6. So, I mean, we mirror them quite a bit when it comes to standings. So I think the big thing is, like, we have two really important home series left for the Sun Belt with Arkansas State and JMU. The weather's supposed to be nice. I sadly will not be able to get down there this weekend for Arkansas State, but I'll be there for all three of the JMU games. So come out to the ballpark, come enjoy it. Like, we think those outfield seats might be there next year, but they might not. So this might be your one chance to watch an ODU game from the outfield. So come support the team. They're going to need your help on it. To get through these last two home series that we have. And of course, I mean, who doesn't want to see us beat VCU? So I think if you're listening to this, it's the day of the game. We'll love to get another one on those guys. They can hit. We watched it.
So their catcher is, he started out a little funky, but he's back to Jacob Lee. He's back to being a monster again. He was a freshman of the year for the conference, and he's back to being it. So yeah, they can hit a little bit.
Yeah, they got a good ball club. I'm sure they want some revenge after, we had that comeback win to beat him up there in Richmond. Got another U of R game on the schedule. I can't remember who else we have from non-conference, but
That's it. Those last two. We got nine conference games and the two midweeks.
I should have known this is our 14th episode of the season this year.
Getting down to the nitty gritty here, boys.
Getting down to the end. So we got to do some winning. So hopefully they start with that, with a win over VCU on Tuesday. Roll that in. Give the Red Wolves a good run for their money. And we'll go from there. But one game at a time. Go get some wins.
Let's go Monarchs.
Go Monarchs.